All right, we're busy today. It is Big Show Friday, but it's little Big Show Friday because our final hour today, we're going to hand it to Mark Boyle and the Pacer Radio Network for a, yeah, happy hour Pacer playoff game. And who better to get us ready for two games in Indianapolis this weekend than the beat writer for the Indiana Pacers at theindystar.com. It is our great friend Dustin DePirak. Pacers get their necessary one victory in Milwaukee. Yeah, no, Giannis, not my problem. That's a Bucks problem. Now Middleton could be hurt. This is a huge opportunity to win a series. This is a huge opportunity to blow the roof off the building tonight. Happy hour playoff basketball. Dustin, when did the NBA think this was a good idea? I think Indianapolis is, if I were the Bucks, I'd be angry.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a strange idea. I mean, obviously ESPN is doing a triple header tonight. And that's, I think, the reason the other two games, the later games are both in the Western Conference. So, you know, if someone's got to be the early game, it's got to be the team in the East, obviously. And so I think they just presume that, you know, time stops for basketball in the state of Indiana. So whatever happens, you know, people can get off work. No big deal. You know, it's Indiana. They like
basketball. No one's going back to work after lunch today downtown. No.
Whole city of Indy is just going to take off. No one's coming back. You know, everyone's just leaving work, going down the Georgia Street, making it an afternoon. So, strange idea, but, you know, I'm not sure what kind of impact it's going to have, but ultimately I imagine Indy's going to show out. But I think it certainly, you know, winning game two was a big deal. That there's going to be some very real momentum. There's going to be some excitement. Obviously, it's been, 4 years or 5 years since they've had a home playoff game, you know, six since they came in with a win, having, you know, managed a win on the road before coming home. So that's all that stuff's a big deal. And so expect, despite the early start, that's going to be a pretty raucous Cambridge Fieldhouse tonight.
Should be. Home court advantages, it can be real. I don't think it's as big a deal in professional sports as collegiate sports, but it is your own bed. It is your own goal. It's your practice facility, your locker room. These guys are pros. They need to win on the road like you did. In Indiana, the Pacers showed you what professional basketball looked like on Tuesday after a very disappointing Sunday. We talked about getting feet wet. We talked about going through the don't get your sun, the roof of your mouth sunburnt by staring up at the proceedings going on. They were frankly terrible on Sunday. They got it out of their system, which was great. So I said I'll give them a pass on Sunday if they reacted on Tuesday. They did. I thought Carlisle was good. He shrank his rotation. He got guys involved. But I think the simple connection is you didn't make any shots on Sunday and they blew you out. You made shots on Sunday, hung around and blew them out. You got to make shots. That's the key to all this, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge key. Like you said, I think obviously the fact that they were they just seemed freaked out. I mean, that was the best.
Everybody was freaked. Not even some of them. All of them were freaked out.
Except Siakam. Except Pascal Siakam.
That's fair.
Like, his heartbeat did not quicken one bit. And because he's been there. He's won a championship. And so first round, it's like, yeah, it's first round of the playoffs. Okay. I mean, he's generally built that way anyway. But I'm sure, I imagine, you know, he had those kind of jitters in his past at some point. You know, obviously this is a guy that picked up basketball late in life, you know, later than life than a lot of people, and, you know, ended up being just a sensational player. But by this point, he's been there. Again, he's got a ring. He's been to several of the playoffs since then. So this isn't, you know, this is not new for him. And it was very clear that was the case. I mean, even Miles Turner looked nervous and he acknowledged that, because it had been that long for him. He'd certainly been there before, but it had been a while. And just everybody seemed, it just seemed like every, you know, catching the ball was hard. Shooting, just everybody was so far off. It just, everybody seemed amped and not in a good way.
That's, you know, right. Because
it wasn't like they didn't come to play. Yeah. Like, they came to play, but they were rattled.
I thought it was like, incredible that every guy he brought off the bench, the first thing they were going to do is shoot it. That's not how the Pacers beat anybody all year. The Pacers move the ball. Yeah. They move people. But, boy, catch and shoot, catch and shoot. Even T.J. McConnell, who, you know, he's 30. Yeah. He's got some miles on the tires. But thankfully it was everybody in the rotation. I didn't think that was a very smart move to get everybody in. Maybe it'll pay dividends later in the series. But boy, Siakam! Now you know why you traded for him. He's been the rock of this experience.
Yeah, no, he really has. I mean, I you knew already, but I mean, I think it's just it's enhanced the extent to which this is a game that fits him. That basically he's sort of said from the beginning, like, look, I can play fast if you want to play fast, but if you have to play slow, you can just throw the ball to me and I'll get you a bucket. You know, like, and he said, I don't know that everybody realizes that yet, but I can. Like, if you that's how I can play. Basically, if you need to slow it down, you know, you throw it into me around the paint and I will find a way to get a shot. And that's my skill set. That's what I can do. And he did. And, you know, over and over again. And I think, you know, he'd clearly shown why he was valuable, but you really saw him take it up a notch these last two games. And he just, you know, he can be just so good in either style of game. When it's the open court, he's perfectly comfortable running in transition, getting out ahead, or just, you know, playing when there's one or two guys back, being able to sort of play through, you know, play past them. And but like if you're going to play in the half court, I mean, he can just get that little turnaround and he just makes it over and over again wherever he's at within, you know, 10-12 feet. You know, he can just sort of back his guy in, you know, turn, slant back a little bit, fade, hit a shot over him. When you're 6'8 with a 7'3 wingspan, I mean, you can really get that, you know, get that ball up high. And it's really tough to, you know, to block.
How he works around shot blockers is amazing. Lopez is wondering, well, I'm going to block this shot. He goes right. It's like a snake. It goes right around him. Tell our listeners about the great Wilt Chamberlain stat that you had in your article. After game two,
when I saw it on, it was just making its way on Twitter. I think it was like off the stats, figured it out. He was the first player since Wilt Chamberlain in 1967 to open the playoffs, like first two games of the playoffs, with 35 or more and 10 or more rebounds. And that's incredible. And I mean, the degree to which he's really stepped up his rebounding is a big deal. I mean, he's always been a pretty good rebounder. But in Toronto, there was a little bit less of that because, you know, he handled the ball a lot. You know, I mean, like a lot of cases, like Siakam was bringing the ball up the floor and being a guy that was really operating on the perimeter and, you know, moving around and getting back down in the paint. But, you know, in this case, he's just been more paint oriented with Haliburton and Andrew Nembhard and those guys really initiating the offense. You know, he's closer to the boards. And when it comes to offense and, you know, defense, he's right there too. So, I mean, he's really rebounded the ball well. And I think that's really done a good job of, you know, the fact that he's done that so well has really added a lot to what they can do defensively and offensively, because he can, you know, he can grab a rebound and take it down the floor. And so that's been a big deal. So, but yeah, it's a phenomenal stat. He's just had an incredible series.
Dustin DePerak, the beat writer for the Indy Star, talking Pacers hoops as we get ready for an early game tonight. 5 o'clock is our pregame. 5:30, we'll tip it with Mark Boyle on the Pacers radio network. Milwaukee doesn't have anybody that can guard Siakam. I think that'll help the Bucks tonight, and here's why. They're going to continue to press and hound Haliburton, because Siakam's going to get him two at a time. But if you let Haliburton get loose for 6, 7, 8 threes, the roof's going to fly off the building. So that'll be interesting to see the counterpunch from Doc Rivers tonight. But how important is it to get Haliburton? Maybe not. You know, Carlisle always talks about we have to score. Haliburton doesn't have to score, but I don't believe that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, he has to score to a degree. Like, he's half right, but he's also half wrong. But it's not really about him being wrong. It's just trying to get us to not write that story.
Like, totally. It's a distraction.
He doesn't think that. He just wants us to think that, or wants us to not feel comfortable asking questions about how much Tyrese is or is not scoring. Like, that's the point of that, is to just sort of back us off of those questions.
Now, I'm going
to
give Haliburton some credit here, and I talked about this earlier in the week. So he struggled in game one. He played okay in game two, 12 points, 12 assists, 30. He was the second best plus minus, so that's always good if you get into the plus minus. It's not a huge thing for me, but anyhow, here's what I was impressed with. He's 80 miles from home. He wasn't 4 for 29. He didn't try to force things that weren't there, which was good.
Sure.
But at some point, you're the guy getting paid $50 million. I'm going to need you to stop passing the ball and try to get some buckets. How do we work that balance here for games 3 and 4 in the friendly confines of Gainbridge Fieldhouse?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to it. I think what I would say was really important. It's not necessarily that he has to. Certainly it's better if he's scoring. But I think it's just an overall level of aggression that also leads to creating for others. And it's just like there still has to be an aggression there, even if you're getting assists, because you've got to be able to break down defenses off the dribble, and you've got to be able to sort of force them to recover and force them to give you an opening to set somebody else up, basically, somehow, some way. There's just got to be an attack mindset. And it's like, I mean, it can be fine if he only takes three shots if he's got like 20 assists, you know, like that's fine. But like, he had to play with a certain level of aggression to get 20 assists. And, like, that level of aggression just wasn't there in game one. I mean, obviously, they're giving him a whole lot of attention. And another piece is, like, he is teeing people up for shots that they're not making, or at least he did in game one. But, I mean, like, he's got to be looking for a shot. He's got to be attacking, and that opens him up to pass. So, like, it's just, I think it's less the idea of, like, oh, he has to take this many shots. But, like, generally, you know, like, if he's attacking just out of that idea, he's going to get 10 or 12 shots. You know, like, if he's got the right mindset, he's going to end up with, you know, at least 10 or 12 shots. Like, 7 tells you the overall attack mentality wasn't there, you know. And so it's just like, there is kind of a more holistic look to take of it. But I mean, I think why he was so much better is Miles Turner was better. You know, I mean, like, they were really doubling, you know, Halliburton off the ball. And if they're going to do that on the ball screens, then Turner has to burn them. Turner has to hit threes. Turner has to hit mid-range jumpers, you know, off the short rolls. He's got to be able to create. And he didn't do a lot of that in game one, and he did a ton of it in game two. You know, I mean, obviously 22 points, 6 assists. I mean, not just making shots, but creating for others. You know, basically getting the ball in that short roll. If Lopez comes up on you, seeing somebody back cut, you know, like, Turner did those things, or pass out to somebody in the corner. I mean, he has the capacity to make passes, and you know, like, you know, Halliburton deserves some hockey assists for that, frankly. So, like, that kind of stuff is all good. Like, that's the right thing. It doesn't just have to be about, well, he has to take 20 shots, you know, because he's the guy that makes all the money. Like, you don't want somebody playing that way of thinking, well, like, a guy who is going to make $50 million a year next year better take 20 shots a game. That's what I got to do. And so you force it, you know. But it's just, there did need to be a more aggressive mentality than what he had in game one. I thought he had it in game two. And I think that's what you need, basically, whether that gets him, you know, 10, he's got to end up taking 10 to 15. Like, that's how it's going to go if he's got the right mentality. But, like, he doesn't need to take 20, and he doesn't need to score 25 points to be effective.
Dustin Dupirak, IndyStar.com, @ Dustin Dupirak on the X, checking in before a Pacer doubleheader this weekend tonight, 5 o'clock pregame. Then we're back Sunday, 6:30 pregame for 7 o'clock. And then, yes, because the Pacers took care of business Tuesday night in Milwaukee, there will be game 5, and that will be also Tuesday night, the final day of April. We haven't seen a game time on that because we're waiting to see how these other series play out. So Siakam, Halliburton, there you go. The bench was shortened, but I think Ben Shepherd is he's a surprise for me. You know, Obi Toppin, mm-hmm. Fine with the Knicks, got it. TJ's been around forever, he's been quiet too. He had a great end of the season, though. But Ben mm-hmm. Shepherd can guard and knock down some shots. And once he got past his freakout stage on Sunday, I think we saw some examples on Tuesday. Does Carlisle go back to an expanded bench in a non-blowout situation, or is this going to be the rotation you believe going forward?
I mean, I think this will probably be it for this series. I think it unless the Bucks adjust. I think basically it's saying, all right, you know, like, Jalen Smith didn't play particularly well. You know, obviously didn't get a lot out of Doug McDermott. Now, there could be scenarios where you look at those two guys and say, okay, well, there's a scenario where you need them. But I think he looked at it and said, you know, it's a good lineup. You know, like, we feel good about the idea of, you know, when Lopez is off the floor, you know, and they move Porter's to the 5, you know, you feel pretty good about a Siakam Toppin, you know, frontline scenario. Who's the 4, who's the 5, you know, doesn't really matter. But those guys are big enough, they're fast enough, you know, they play quick, and, you know, it, like, the Bucks aren't going that big. So, you know, at the end of the day, that works. I mean, and they were able to do it when they separated and just put Lopez out there. You know, that's a little bit of a tougher scenario, you know, when it's Lopez versus Portis. You know, but those two guys can deal with Lopez and Portis. And again, if Bobby's playing the 5 and Lopez is off the floor, then, you know, they have as much size as they could need when they've got, you know, Siakam and Toppin together. And if those guys are playing better, you know, then it makes sense. And I mean, it's just Jalen Smith didn't have a great start. I mean, I imagine somewhere, you know, those guys are going to play. But I feel like Jalen Smith has had too good of a year to get buried.
Right.
But, you know, he hasn't been as successful, you know, really since the break as he was earlier. Early, he was just darn near automatic. He's still been effective. He's still had some good games. But, you know, overall, he hasn't been as consistent. You know, obviously, Isaiah Jackson is a guy that, you know, like, has been really in and out of the rotation, you know, all year, basically, and stepped up in a lot of cases where Jalen's been shaky. But I think, you know, if they feel like they can get by with Siakam and Obi, then they might stick with this more frequently, and they can get by with it this series. It might look something different if they win this. You know, obviously matchups will certainly change, you know, whether they're playing, if they move on, or whether they get Philadelphia or New York, regardless of which. I think that, you know, that changes things. And, you know, you could see some of those guys come back and come back more. You know, I mean, I think, you know, obviously everybody, I think, was just killing Doug McDermott because he was, I think, was minus 17 in like 6 minutes.
Yeah, he was.
On Monday. And that's rough. But I do think, you know, there's a non-zero possibility that somewhere in here you need him to go knock a shot or two down. There's obviously a lot you lose with him at this stage in his career, but, you know, he's probably the best movement shooter they have. And it's not enough to run the risk of everything else. I don't know. He's made some shots down the stretch of the season, and I was like, yeah, no one else hits that. You know,
right.
Like that's what you're missing from Buddy Hield that you had before, you know, like a guy that just kind of comes around, curls, turns, you know, pulls up, drills. And you're
yeah,
like,
that has to be accounted for. Really, right.
That. Yeah, it has to be accounted for. And so there, I could see there being a scenario where that's necessary. That doesn't mean, I don't think it's going to be frequent. I think obviously that the extent to which he didn't show he could play playoff defense, is an issue. And it's going to be hard for him to get back on the floor because of that. But that's still there in the background.
And Siakam's killing Jackson's time too, because Jackson's an automatic rebound, and Siakam's grabbing rebounds. Well, you don't need that. And the Bucks don't really attack the. I mean, Lopez sits out there and shoots threes all day. He didn't go in the lane. We don't need any rim protection there. Bucks injuries. How about where are we with Middleton? Did he practice yesterday? And there's no chance for Giannis tonight, is there?
Yeah, he's already been ruled out. He was already listed as doubtful, and he's been ruled out. Was ruled out early. Well, I think the 11:30 injury report, I believe, had the official declaration that Giannis is out for this one. Doc Rivers is not trying to hold, like, you know, a lot of coaches are willing, including Rick Carlisle, are willing to stretch that out until, you know, the pregame press conference to tell you whether they're going to play or not. Doc was really more willing to get it over with. And so, you know, they've already declared Giannis out. Middleton's questionable, and so, I mean, I think he said he didn't practice yesterday, so I don't know. Don't know if they shot around this morning. So
Shooting around is not NBA basketball. Shooting around is not NBA playoff basketball. So the Pacers have to take advantage of this opportunity. If we're talking the middle of next week, buddy, I'm not going to make you make a prediction here, but I don't know if you want to go back to Milwaukee 2-2 with no Giannis and a banged up Middleton. I don't feel that's the best the best recipe for this moving forward.
You mean, like, are we talking about the Bucks or with the Pacers? I mean, like, yeah. Like,
yeah, 2-2 is not good for the Pacers. If you've got an all-timer hurt and Middleton can't play today, you can't go back 2-2, can you?
I mean, you can. But it's certainly possible. But you and your theories. But no, I mean, you have the opportunity to flip home court. You know, and like obviously, it's not impossible for them to win in Milwaukee. You know, they've done it before. They did, you know, on Tuesday. So it's not out of the question. It's not like they can't win in Milwaukee. But, you know, obviously, the longer this thing goes, you don't have control of it, the longer you run the risk of Giannis coming back and being a superhero. And so, you know, and he'll be fresh and the whole bit. So, you do presume, okay, like, you got to try to get these. I mean, you certainly can't lose them both. And so you better get tonight. And, you know, like, game four is a really big deal, you know. And if you can go to Milwaukee up 3-1, that's massive. That'd be giant if you could pull that off. But, I mean, you got to win one first. So, you know, it certainly would be better if they're 2-2 than if they're 1-3. They got to get the first one first and then ride it from there.
Awesome. Thanks for your insight, buddy. It's the best. We will get caught up next week after game five when you take the expressway back to Indianapolis. Safe travels, but you don't have far to go the next couple of nights, so that's good. And your insight's awesome, brother. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you.
That's my buddy Dustin Dupirak from the Indianapolis Star, at Dustin Dupirak on the X. IndyStar.com, support local journalists, please. We beg you every time they come on so we can get inside, so we can get all this great information and pass it along to you. Pacers, Bucks tonight. Yeah, 5 o'clock pregame, 5:30 tip time from Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Pacers are healthy and ready to go. That's the good news as well. We'll come back. Joe Smith reports. We'll wrap up the hour, and we'll see what Smitty's got for us this afternoon on a small Big Show Friday here on the final Friday of April.